Chapter 24. Sajan Island, Albania. As soon as they ducked through the hole in the wall, they realized their task was going to be much harder than they'd anticipated. Instead of stepping into an open space, they found themselves standing in a labyrinth. On either side and ahead of them, eroding wooden coffins were stacked 8 high and 4 deep, forming a corridor that was barely wider than their shoulders. Headlamps illuminating the way, they walked to the end of the corridor. They found themselves at a T-turn. To the left and right, more coffins.
"Are you keeping count?" Sam whispered.
192 so far.
The Svernek graveyard isn't that big.
It is if they were packing them shoulder to shoulder and stacking them. We know Mala died in 1436. Even if his was the first burial, we could be talking about 5+ centuries.
I just got a shiver down my spine. Left or right? Remy chose left. They walked a few paces. Ahead, Sam's headlamp washed over an exterior brick wall.
"Dead end," he said.
Was that a pun?
Freudian slip. They turned around, and with Remy in the lead, proceeded past the T-turn and down the adjoining corridor. At the end of this, a right turn, followed by another 64 coffins, followed by a left turn and more coffins. The pattern continued through another 5 turns until the body count exceeded 600. At last they entered an open space. Here the coffins were also stacked 8 high, all the way to the vaulted ceiling's crossbeams. Sam and Remy turned in a circle, headlamps sweeping over walls of white pine.
"There,"
Sam said suddenly. On the western wall, behind a mountain of rotting pine, was a row of stone sarcophagi.
14, Remy said. "The same as the number of mausoleums in the graveyard."
"That's a bit of good luck," Sam replied. He counted the coffin wall behind the sarcophagi.
"Unbelievable," he murmured. "Remy, there are over 1,000 corpses in this building."
"Irta must have been mistaken.
After the storm and flood, they must have taken all the bodies. Svernek isn't so much a graveyard as it is a charnel pit."
"There's no smell."
"According to Selma, the last burial was in 1912. Even with embalming, there's probably little flesh left."
Sam smiled and sang softly, "Dem bones, dem bones, dem dry bones."
"Don't give up your day job. Let's check for markings.
Mala's mausoleum bore a huge patriarchal cross. Maybe they did the same for his sarcophagus."
A quick check of the end of each sarcophagus showed no crosses. Sam and Remy walked along the row, using their headlamps to peer on the top of each stone coffin. Of the 14, 3 had been chiseled with the Eastern Orthodox Church symbol. They sat together on the floor and stared at it. Remy asked,
"How heavy do you think each one is?"
400-500 pounds. Then, after a moment, "But the lid? That's a different story."
"Crowbar."
"Pardon?" Remy asked with a smile. She was used to her husband's cerebral non sequiturs. They were his way of working through problems.
"We forgot a crowbar.
That lid weighs 100 pounds at most, but prying open that seam while the sarcophagus is wedged in there...
Damn!
I knew I had that we're forgetting something important feeling."
"Luckily, you have a plan."
Sam nodded. "Luckily, I have a plan." Having long ago learned the universal value of 3 items, rope, wire, and duct tape, Sam and Remy rarely went into the field without them, even when the specific task or journey didn't obviously call for any of them. This time, in a hurry to beat nightfall, they'd forgotten one of the trio in addition to the crowbar. Wire. The 50-foot coil of climbing rope and the duct tape would be enough, Sam hoped. It took only a few minutes of scrabbling over the church's crossbeams before they found what they needed, a loose L-bracket. After twisting it free, Sam used his body weight to smash it closed over the rope's center point. Next, he crawled over the sarcophagus and wriggled the bracket into the rear seam beneath the lid. Then, grasping the rope like reins, he tugged until the L-bracket was firmly seated in place.
Finally, he and Remy tossed the ends of the rope over a beam and used their combined body weight to slowly take up the slack until the far end of the lid began rising.
"I've got it,"
Remy said through clenched teeth, taking Sam's end.
"Go ahead."
Sam hurried forward, bent over the lid, and slipped his fingers under its near side. He leaned backward and straightened his legs. The lid popped up and slid free between his legs. The L-bracket popped free with a metallic twang. Together, they stepped around the lid and leaned forward, their headlamps panning over the sarcophagus's contents.
"Bones, bones, and more bones," Remy said.
"And not a glint of gold in sight," Sam replied. "One down, two to go."
Though neither of them voiced the worry, Sam and Remy both had the gut feeling that whichever sarcophagus they chose next, it too would be the wrong choice. Similarly, neither of them dared acknowledge the nagging voice of doubt in the back of each's head, that Father Bishop Basham Mala had not been faithful to the King of Mustang's request, and that the second Thurang disc had been long ago discarded or lost, along with the Golden Man and, if Jack Karna were right, the location of Shangri-La. 30 minutes and a second sarcophagus lid later, they found themselves staring at a second set of bones and a second strikeout. 90 minutes after they entered the church, they slid back the lid of the third and final sarcophagus. Exhausted, Sam and Remy sat before it and took a minute to catch their breath.
"Ready?" Sam said.
"Not really, but let's get it over with," replied Remy.
On hands and knees, they crawled forward, went on either side of the stone lid, and after taking a deep breath, peeked over the edge into the sarcophagus. From the blackness, a sliver of gold winked back at them.